urban part of town. I mean, it's sort of a nice little town. But you get everything you need.
Ready to go, gentlemen? Let the House Health Education Social Services meeting come to order. Let the record show that this is March 26, 1984. This hearing is being held in the Capitol Building in Juneau, Alaska, at 1:12. Let the record show the members present, Representatives Pessinger, Ball, Davis, and Fisher. On the agenda today, we have consideration of House Bill 631, which is an act related to runaway children, sponsored by Representative Liska. I want to welcome everyone who came to observe and to testify. If you are interested in presenting your comments, I appreciate sign up on that sheet. If you are just a visitor, I'd also appreciate it if you sign up on the sheet so we can have a record of the attendance to this meeting. I believe that Representative Liska is present, and if he would like to come forward and present his comments on this bill, this is our first hearing on the bill, and we welcome your comments, Representative Liska. For the record, you are going to be electronically recorded, so please state your name.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the Yes Committee. My name is John Liska, representing District 15, the prime sponsor of House Bill 631, an act relating to runaway children. I'd like to start off and reason why this particular piece of legislation was introduced. I worked very close with the Anchorage Crime Commission, and specifically one person, Maurice Hall. This was brought to my attention that we have an awful lot of youth around Anchorage, especially, which I'm more familiar with, Gulf State. They're getting themselves into trouble due to our present aspect towards our younger juveniles and what can be done to alleviate some of the problems and help these young people. The purpose of this bill is threefold. Section 1 is an attempt to acquire by law a minor to be accountable to either parents at home or to a guardian at a foster home or be placed in an appropriate institution. Presently, if a minor runs away from home, he is not breaking any laws. He is free to do as he wishes. The intention behind our bill is the child does not have the maturity to exist in today's society without becoming a subject of prey for a variety of undesirable types of people. And I'm speaking specifically for the type of slime which we have in our society today are preying on these young folks. All you have to do is go back to the Rodriguez case as a typical example of what's happened to our kids. Remember, article number 1 in your packet, which I believe you all should have a copy of, clearly describes what happens to these runaway children. While it is not the intention of to violate the rights of any child, we feel it is the responsibility of either the parents or the state to be in control of the minor because at this stage in their life, they are not mature enough to be able to function in society on their own. Section C refers to a minor who refuses to reside with the parents and whose custody has been transferred to the state, not because of abuse, neglect, or abandonment. The minor has just decided he doesn't want to live at home. Now, I know several instances myself where this has happened. These children reach a stage where they say, well, they don't want to pay attention to what their father says, what their mother says. They're beyond, they're into the teenage type age group, and they know more than any adult does. So this is a crucial stage for them to get themselves into real trouble. The parents of such a minor will no longer be responsible for the support of such a minor. Simply put, if the child refuses to live at home by the parents' rules, the parents can legally be declared not responsible for the support of the child. I believe the way it reads today is that they are responsible if they are picked up by authorities and until the court takes action on it. This will encourage the child to work this out with their parents. Additionally, it will encourage the Department of Health and Social Services to recommend the minors go back to their families due to additional state costs. In the last section of the bill states that a peace officer shall make a reasonable effort to locate a minor who is evading his guardian. Presently, the police can, if they want to, but they don't have to, try to locate a runaway child. Additionally, it is essential, in my opinion, that these children not be allowed to remain on the streets, even for a couple of days, or long enough to decide at a court hearing whether or not they are to be picked up. Now, I refer to Article 2, that's number 2, that's on the last page of the document that you have right before you, that's the last paragraph.
The subsection?
It's Article number 2, which would be the last paragraph on that particular page, Mr. Chairman. The longer they're on the streets, the more likely they are to become involved in situations that will have a lifelong effect on them. We feel they are incapable of protecting themselves from this involvement, and therefore it is a state's responsibility to protect them. Now, perhaps all of us should search our minds as to just what we have in our youth today, the types of problems we're getting involved in. We're getting involved in child prostitution, we get involved in pushing drugs, we get schools suspended from schools, truancy rates high, and so if an individual, if the parent takes the responsibility to call the police department, they would like to have their individual children picked up because they haven't been home, or they suspect they're dealing in drugs or something. This puts further teeth into it that the police will go after these kids and locate them and bring them to the proper authorities so that they can be looked at real close. Are they in trouble? Potential going off the deep end. And basically, in a nutshell, that's what this particular piece of legislation does. Is McLaughlin Youth Center right now, the latest figure I had on it, we have approximately 80% of those children over there have been sexually molested. Now, whether it happened before, I can't tell you that now, but that's what it's estimated now, that 80% have been sexually molested. Either their parents, and if it's the case, then this would come up in a deal like this, because there's a section in here that deals for abuse, neglect, or abandonment. I feel that this is a piece of legislation that we should look at real close to it, because we just cannot build enough McLaughlin youth centers. We're getting to the ages where they're at the borderline, where they're going to be tried as juveniles or adults, and in the cases of some of them, they can be waived over to adult courts and end up in adult prison. So perhaps this is a type of legislation without stepping on anybody's constitutional rights that can gather these children up, these waiver children off the streets, and try to correct them before they get too far down the road. I'd be glad to answer any questions if any committee members have any of them.
Thank you, John. I'd like to let the record show that Representative Ewing came in about 5 minutes ago, and I neglected to give the time that we commence this meeting, which is approximately 1:30. I have a couple of questions, and Representative Pessinger has also on your bill. I'd first of all like to commend you, Representative Wiska, on introducing this piece of legislation. I believe that it's going to tighten up some of the loose practices that we have had in the past as far as the children are concerned, and as far as responsibility of parents and children to themselves and their family unit is concerned. I think it's a step in the right direction rather than urging the separation of family members, urging that family members stay together and try and work out their problems. Too many times it's been that somebody else is stepping in saying, well, we'll fix the problem for you. You don't have to make an effort. And I strongly suspect that that's part of the reason for this bill in the first place. I, too, have talked to the Juvenile Crime Commission members over the weekend, just recently, as a matter of fact, just last weekend, and have been filled with through some stories that are prevalent right here underneath our noses. And we need to take some action and open up the way to resolving some of these issues. So I first of all commend you on that. Part of your opening statements dealt with subsection 1, page 1, starting with line 10. And what's your interpretation of the words habitually absent, Mr. from the school? Does that mean twice or three times runaway, or once and a half, or second time around? Or what would you interpret as being the word habitually?
Well, Madam Chairman, I would put my interpretation on, for example, habitually absent, truancy from school would be one example.
I mean, if they were absent two or three times and such things as that?
Oh, yes, habitually absent. They're just not at home very much, just on the move all the time. I mean, they've got other interests that are a lot more important than homework or things like that at home.
As I read that first full subsection paragraph there, and correct me if I'm misreading it, but what I think it says here is that if a kid is habitually absent from the home or foster home to which the court has told them they must stay, that's the stipulation, and if they don't stay there, that they can be put into a juvenile institution. Is that what you're saying in this paragraph here? Let the record show that Representative Copeland is here. If that is the case, then I'm going to open up a suggestion that I would like for you to take a look at. And I'll parallel my suggestion by giving you an instance that I'm a different kind of instance that is done in a different sector of our population. When there is an issue and a problem that needs to be resolved, and there are more than parents or others involved, and that is when there is a case before the parent, the hospital, the school for the care and keeping, or the future care and keeping of, say, for example, a handicapped child who is losing more ability to motivate by themselves. You know, what's going to happen to this child? How are we going to handle it? Are they going to go to school? Do they need to be hospitalized? What's the plan? In other words, what is the plan? And what happens in instances like that is hospital representative gets together with the parent, with the school counselor, with the school nurse, with the parent, with perhaps the nonprofit health agency that deals and is providing some services, and perhaps social worker, if that is the case, and so forth, and special education instructor, and so forth. And they all sit down around the table, and they all throw their particular requirements or thinking on what to expect in the future as far as that person is concerned, that child is concerned. And their eventual goal is to put together a plan as to how everybody's going to handle their aspect with this plan. And everybody's in unison then, so that there isn't any disruption in next week or next month or 2 years down the pike, that everybody is in tune with the problems that child has or will have and what to expect and how it's going to be handled. That to me is good planning for the safekeeping and future activities of a child who has a problem. This happens to be a physical problem, or could be a mental problem too. So it seemed to me as though that might be one of the best ways that we could, as legislators, develop this piece of legislation in correlation with the mandate that you set down here. Too often I think that the child is runaway, picked up, given to a foster parent. Nobody really is going to get on to the problem except then the probation officer comes in, and nobody's linking up with each other except by letter, by file, and so forth. I think that we could fix the whole problem a lot quicker if all these people would get together, sit down around the table, and if there's child molestation going on, somebody kicks that out on the table and says, hey, this is a problem. And here somebody else says, well, this person also has something else to say. Too often we don't have that kind of thing. And I suspect that that's one of the reasons that we have repeat offenders of runaways. And pretty soon they start shoplifting. And as you have looked at the profile of 15 and 16-year-old kids, pretty soon they're in jail for other things.
Madam Chairman, could I comment? I at one time, my wife and I had a foster home for approximately 7 years. And I can speak from experience from working with the smallest group we had was neighborhood of about 6-7 years up to teenagers up to 14-15. Now, the last year I had my foster home, I had two teenagers that I couldn't do anything with at all. Matter of fact, they jumped the gun and they even left the state. I turned over to the police to try to locate them and they just washed their hands of the whole deal. I understand one of them was found in Texas, or somebody heard from one of them in Texas, the other was somewhere in Nevada. So I had no control of them. After I turned them over to the police department, tried to locate them, they said, well, so what? You know, here's two teenagers, and I couldn't do anything with them. And they were turned over to me from the Family Youth Services as a foster home, which I had no control over. I had no control. He wanted to turn them over to the police. Man, this was in, it must have been about 70, in the early 70s.
Were you briefed on the problems that those kids had before they came to you, that they may be incorrigible if that's the...
No, I was not. What I'd like to further comment on here, our foster homes need a good working over here right now, too, is to screen these people out. They could be a reason in some of these foster homes why they don't want to stay there. This could be. I don't know, but I kind of suspect it. Maybe the parents are no good, so to speak, if you want to use that language. And some of the foster homes are probably the same category, too. So you can't blame the kid for wanting to run away. That should be investigated out. But the way Section 1 reads here, if he's habitual absent from either the home or a foster home, which he's been entrusted in by a court order, and they're in legal custody, and they can't do anything with him, so to speak, then and shall be ordered committed by the court in custody of the department for placement in appropriate juvenile institution.
But up until that time, nobody's taken the effort like they would in an institution. After they're institutionalized, then somebody sits around a table and talks about what's going to happen to that youngster and how they're going to treat them, what therapy they're going to give them, what program of education and so forth. That's the time when somebody sits down and seriously looks at the problem that the kid's got. Before that time, it's kind of a hit and a miss affair. That's the point I was trying to make. And before we put them into an institution, maybe we can, after the second runaway or first runaway or third runaway or whatever you're suggesting here, maybe that's the time to sit down around a table and discuss what the problem is before they get to the institution. By that time, they've committed several crimes besides running away. They probably got picked up for shoplifting, and from there they might have picked up a car that didn't belong to them, and, you know, selling their bodies and so forth. I've seen the profiles myself, and I know exactly what you're saying. The fact is that institutionalizing isn't going to prevent them from doing that all over again. We should prevent that from happening in the first place. That's your object in the first place. Yeah.
Well, ma'am, Madam Chairman, what I'm trying to say here is, if we got a child that's incorrigible, otherwise the parent can't do anything with him, or the foster home can't do anything with him from Family Youth Services,
and
somebody in state government should be able to do something to keep these kids off the street, because you know and I know that as a parent or a foster home individual, if they run away, right now under the present law, the police are not going to do anything about it. The health and social service people are not going to do anything about it because they're not required to. This particular people legislation says you will do something about it.
Right.
And if it takes money to build an additional juvenile institution for them to keep these kids off the street, then we have to pay the piper. That's all there is to it. But there's just too many of those kids are going out and getting themselves into trouble. And it's up to, I guess, the Health and Social Services and the court to find out, the Family Youth Services, who's at fault.
Mr. Pastor.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. John, I too want to compliment you for, you're seeing a problem and you're trying to solve the problem, and I really respect a person who tries to solve a problem. To me, what I'm seeing here, though, is a need for a, and I'd like to have you, with your experience on the judiciary, do you see a need to have an omnibus approach on our Juvenile Delinquency Act? It seems to me that this is just a piece. It's just a small illustration of a total problem, and that if we try to do this piecemeal, we may not give due regard for people's rights, or we may not see the full potential. Do you have anything in judiciary, or do you know the status with Jay Warner through your contacts, to where there's an approach to just go through this whole area of juvenile delinquency, or being a juvenile and just work it through? It seems like to me I can start citing sections where we've got some good laws here, and then we got Boyd's here, and to me I'm seeing a need for an omnibus approach rather than and if I were to comment, see, I look at your approach, and I'm looking like there's a whole big picture out here, and we're looking at one piece of it. But to solve the problem, we got to go back to the whole big picture. And I guess I'm hung up on this word institution here. See, that scares me a little bit. And when does the runaway have rights? And when doesn't he have rights? What are his rights? How does he come into the system? When does juvenile delinquency come into play? It's all over the statute books, but I don't find it really coordinated. Do you have any, I'm espousing too much, but do you see the need for an omnibus approach in this area? Are you working on an omnibus approach? Do you see what I'm saying, and what do you think?
Madam Chairman, that possibly would be a solution for it, and perhaps an institution that could be worded as a juvenile facility. What we're attempting to do here is not to put these kids into a training facility, but is to put them in a holding pattern, so to speak, until another closer look can be done when the Family Youth Services come.
Okay.
This is what I'm attempting to do here. Otherwise, get them off the street, pick them up, put them in these facilities where they can have another look at them, without just having one and all over the place and over to this gambling parlor tonight in Spinards, and tomorrow night over in the Baldoon area someplace, and get involved in a smoking deal over there, so to speak. This is what I'm attempting to do here. I see, however, the referral in here is, the next referral is to judiciary, so this will definitely be looked at real close time we get it over there, as far as constitutionality and what, how to get.
John, Mary was trying to get my attention because she had a comment to make, and I'd be very welcome and open to hearing it if she'd like to say something.
The comment was the institution there. We did not want to put them in the police. You know, we didn't want to take them to jail. We didn't want to send them to McLaughlin. We want a place to put them. It could have been a holding facility. It could be a safe home. Anything where we can pick them up off the street right now before they're out there for 2 or 3 days, because your packet of information shows you within 48 hours, they will be preyed upon by someone. The essence is to get them off the street immediately, put them someplace where they cannot leave, and then you would decide what you're going to do.
So I think the word institution might be picked up, if it says juvenile institution, the administration, Family Youth Services automatically would interpret that as being McLaughlin or the youth center in Fairbanks and so forth, and that's where you don't want to put them.
That's right, ma'am. We wouldn't want to put them in the McLaughlin. No way, because normally they have to have a reason to put them in the McLaughlin.
We'll work on that word together and see if we can come up with something else. Sam, are you finished?
Well, if I could, Madam Chairman.
Go ahead.
John, have you had any contact with, like, Jay Warner on... could you just give me a little background on the network that exists, as you understand it, to work with and to help juveniles with the right care for them?
No, I really have, Representative Passenger, in that respect. Basically, my exposure is to the hardened criminals, corrections in that respect. I've always been very much interested in juveniles, even from the back of the days when I had a foster home. It just hurts me to see these young kids that are getting themselves into trouble, and I mean bad trouble. If you recall last session, I believe it was Representative Lindar put a piece of legislation in regard to child prostitution. Do you recall that?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Now this, a lot of people don't believe that, but that's happening in Alaska today. This is actually happening. Mm-hmm. And I can't put my finger on it. I doubt if any of us can put our finger exactly on it right now. The same thing as porno rings is another one for these small children.
You'll be glad to hear that I got a call this morning from the Juvenile Corrections Commission. Said they put one more in jail this morning, 50 counts. So you'll be happy to hear that.
Was that Adams?
I'm not sure.
Not from one, but from three counts, depending on it.
Mr. Call.
Mr. Lesko, what concerns me a little bit in relation to the conversation that was started by Representative Pessinger about the use of the word institution. You got the child, and I'm not sure, again, the question of definition is another matter, whether somebody who's absent from school for a few days or what have you will fall into this definition or not is something that maybe needs to be worked on. But let's assume you have a child who is out on his own on the street and for whatever reason feels he can't go home or doesn't wish to, and we accept, according to this bill, that he's not a victim of abuse of any sort in the home and so on. And now we want to catch him or get him off the street and put him someplace. And aside from the questions of his civil rights and whether or not we have any right to capture him, this is another question. Let's assume we do. Let's assume it's appropriate, and the child is in a dangerous situation, and we want to keep him safe and keep him from the people who might prey upon him and so forth. And if we don't have a facility, right now we've got these places like McLaughlin, and we've got the foster homes. We've got an occasional group home scattered around, but in many cases, there doesn't seem to be anything in between a real, you know, jail-like situation and a situation where he's free to come and go as he pleases. In other words, in many of the communities that I have, maybe there will be someone in the community who's a licensed foster parent who you could bring the child over to that person. And if that child keeps leaving, then you get into your circumstance here. Well, in many regions of the state, we just don't have any institutions suitable to fill the intent of your bill. And I'm wondering what action you have taken or what you'd recommend this committee do or what you propose to the Finance Committee be done in order to establish facilities that meet the kind of description that you've given us, because I think it's an admirable notion. I'm just concerned what's going to happen when that judge has that child and there isn't anything in between the foster home that he left and the jail that you don't want him to send to. What do you think we ought to do about it? Do you have any recommendations for the committee?
Well, possibly a solution to a small town like you're from in the Haines area or Skagway, so forth. I believe in a foster home type setup for these children. I don't know how rampant it is in Haines, Representative Gall.
Well, we're in your own community, sir. I'm just curious about
it. Well, it could possibly be that a foster home setup where these children could be put. But they couldn't be allowed to come and go if they're picked up by the police, because you let them in here, you can put him in the front door and he goes out the back door. I mean, you can't have that either. There has to be some control. In the Anchorage area, where we're dealing probably with hundreds of these types of individuals over a period of a year, that's for sure. I would venture to say there that we would have to have a facility there that would be staffed by the Family Youth Services under HESS to...
I don't want to play any tricks in the questions. What I'm really driving at is, would you work to support new funding for such a program that I think would probably be necessary to create these institutions?
Oh, absolutely, Madam Chairman. I certainly would, because I look at it... Here's where I look at our juvenile problems we have today. If we can't correct them before they reach the age of 19, for example, then we're gonna have them over into their adult corrections, and we're gonna be putting them in with hardcore individuals, and we've just about lost them once we get them to that state. If we can correct these youngsters before they ever get to that state, this is what we all have should be, our goal should be, is to keep them from going over the line. Because I think you know, and I know, we can't build enough institutions to lock all of them up in this state if a great percentage of our youngsters here are going to go off the deep end. They're going to end up in behind bars. They're going to be incarcerated, which is, it's not only an added expense to the state, but it's also losing our own people. It's a big problem. We should address it.
No, is this for children under 16 or under 18 when you say minor?
Well, I would, a juvenile should be classified anybody under, I believe, 18.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Under 18. But right here we're addressing a lot of school children. Truancy. I'd like to cite one thing here while I still have the chance. I talked to Superintendent Davis the other night. Here, you know, of the Anchorage School District. And he and I had quite a talk about this. I said, what is our truancy rate in Anchorage? He said, well, you'd be surprised. I said, well, it's rough. He said, it's more than I would like to see. We've also got the school suspension system in effect now. Otherwise, a student would be suspended for maybe talking back to somebody or causing a ruckus or smoking a pot or what have you around, they're suspended. Well, these kids are out on the street, there's nobody controlling them, and the amount of truancy we have. Well, there goes a blue cruiser down through there, and he sees all kinds of kids walking down the street, and that's it. They say, well, I ain't got time to bother these. We don't know whether they're actually truants or suspended. They don't know where they're going. At least they can stop and ask these kids, what's up, you see? Or we ours at a night. These kids, youngsters out there going to and from these game of parlors. These are the kids that are really getting in trouble. At least give the police a chance to see what's your problem. And I don't think that's involved in our constitutional rights. Question whether we're trying to keep them out of trouble.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Maybe a couple points. I think Sam Pester had a couple good points in regard to maybe an omnibus sort of approach to where we're going with this. Also, the idea of maybe setting up shelters. I, too, question the line 15 under juvenile institution, if that's really the appropriate term to use there. And I think a lot of times we are harboring more problems with having juveniles all put in kind of an institutional situation. If it was a shelter type of thing, much like they do for a domestic violence counsel and some of these other people, abused women, perhaps that would be an alternative that we could set up. I also have some concerns, as Representative Gohl has, on what is really meant on line 11 in the term habitually absent. And I don't know if we can come up with a more specific definition of that or not. That would be one thing. Then down on line 27 and 28 and 29, maybe just a question there, states, however, a parent has no responsibility for support of a minor child who refuses to voluntarily reside with the parent and whose legal custody has been transferred from the parent by court decree, unless custody of the child has been transferred from the parent because of abandonment, abuse, or neglect. Does that mean that if this runaway child leaves the family, goes off, does that mean that there's no more responsibility for support from the family from a legal standpoint?
That's the way we put it in there, and that's why I wanted it in there.
So what you're saying is that if a runaway runs away from home consistently and is away from the home, then that should, for some reason, cut off the support from the parents.
That's the intent of it, because if the parent has no control over their child and are picked up by the police and are placed actually under the wards of the state, then the state should take responsibility over to correct the problem. Because parents County, they've shown that the foster home or the parent has no control over these particular children. So if they have no control over them, why should they have to pay some?
I guess my only thought there would be that if we get too strict in this particular area, that there wouldn't, in the case of trying to reshape the family and they try to come back together and make it work, I always like to see solutions to things where before we have to put a Band-Aid on it. I mean, that's what I constantly see us doing. We're trying to get a shelter set up, we're trying to get an institution set up, and by that time, it's so far along that we can't control it. It's got to be stopped in the family, and anyway, there's countless instances I can give the committee, but it's going to take all afternoon.
That's all right. We've got all afternoon to do that, because this is the only bill we have on schedule at this time. So if you have any more suggestions,
well,
please go ahead.
I had a chance, when I was up in Anchorage a couple weekends ago, I had a chance to talk to one of the attorneys who was one of the legal guardians for a case where there was incest that was occurring, as a matter of fact, in a military family. And this particular girl kept running away from home and was away from him. And it seemed like every time they wanted to actually act, the wife and the mother, the wife and the husband worked together so that they had some kind of agreement that they wouldn't consent to this incest that actually occurred. So as a result, the court couldn't act to prosecute and bring the child back because of some kind of a problem with the court proceedings. Now, if they just go ahead and spill all their guts to the judge, then the father gets a tremendous sentence, breaks up the whole family. And it was explained to me that it's one of the most closest types of relations. I mean, not positively, but I mean closest types of relationships between people when you have a father, a daughter kind of thing. And it just seems like there's have to be some way we can try to control it before it got to the standpoint that you have to appoint a guardian of the state. Here this attorney was working on it. I didn't find out. I'm just open for solutions, but it's very archaic. And here this girl is in Denver, Colorado.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to comment on that. Now, I don't happen to be a reverend, or I don't happen to be a god myself. But I say this, that when we're dealing with a particular crime like that of incest in a family, and I know how the Family Youth Service and how different state agencies feel about this, they would rather keep that family intact instead of getting him away from that kid. I just go 180 degrees the other way myself. I'm not pulling any punches when I say that. I go 180 degrees. That's happening in a family, as far as I'm concerned, that family life is shot right there. And I can't see where you're going to better anything of allowing that to put those two back in contact with each other again. Because I think the family life is, I don't think you can salvage it. It's just my personal opinion.
I guess it had to do with as we got into this conversation, this is an attorney that's well known in Anchorage, but as we got into the conversation, it had to do with presumptive sentencing. Where we're going with presumptive sentencing, and when they have presumptive sentencing, they have to give them a sentence of so many years, and that doesn't give any kind of latitude. It seems like they throw the book at somebody. There doesn't seem to be any latitude in there. It completely destroys the family situation. So there might be a possible change in presumptive sentencing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's a presumptive sentence, an unclassified felony, and on conviction carries a 30-year sentence. So I can see where it could sure disrupt family life if you put the husband away or what have you.
So they don't confess, you see. So, but the people who do confess, who tell the truth, are the ones that really have to pay for it.
True.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. So it's a backwards situation.
Well, I think we've all read the one instance that caused a little fear, I believe, last year, where a judge was noted on record as saying that best of the family unit, he felt that the father who was causing all these problems and was molesting his own children would be best off free to go back to his home. And that was picked up by the media and I'm sure a number of legislators as being in violation of what we anticipated that person ought to have as far as punishment is concerned, at least to protect the child and keep him away from him. Because it happened then. There was no reason to believe that it was going to be happening again. I believe it was Representative Locker one time before this committee had said that, at least in her community, the policy is to take, it's, in other child isn't removed from the home, it's the molester who is removed from the home, or the abuser, and they're sent away, or got kept away by court order, rather than disrupt the child's family relationship with brothers, sisters, and mother, let's say, that it's the father who gets booted out and has to stay out. So that, to me, is a lot better than pulling the child out, disrupting their home life, and so forth. Representative Kopanen was next, and Mr. Davis.
Thank you. John, I agree with the other that you really brought up a major problem, the one that's sort of been lying. Dormant. We haven't really faced it for decades. The last years of the Egan administration, I set up the Office of Child Advocates, the board, which followed Thelma Langdon, the chair of that, and I served on it too. And as a result of some of that, I've been supporting Covenant House, doing some advocacy for them in New York.
Mr.
Covenant,
I can't hear you.
On a private basis, but for example, there are so many different institutional problems that this raises, and I think we have to deal with it. I'm not sure, and I think Representative Pesninger and Ewing are right, that we need an omnibus approach. It's almost like a blue ribbon board that looks at the different aspects and tries to plug all the holes. For example, you mentioned the schools, suspending children and then putting them on the street. We give them money to educate those kids, and they put them out on the street. Some systems, will keep them in special programs or not in the regular class, but in the school under discipline. But others, of course, it's easier to put them out. So that would be one thing. Someplace in the statutes, we would have to reward those systems that keep the kids under control and make it more difficult for those systems who turn the problem aside. I don't have any one question or one answer. And for example, do negligent parents, might they drive the kid out the way that schools do? There's also the question, actually this may help, because one of the questions very often happens about missing children. Police don't look for them because they're assumed to be runaways, and in many cases they aren't runaways. Unless we put it in such a way as to presume that the children are missing unless they are known to have tied into a shelter somewhere or made some contact. On the other hand, I don't know if Anchorage currently has a shelter. It was at one point the only one in the state. There's only one place in the state where runaway children could go to and be assured of this sort of safe harbor. I don't think that we can cover all of the questions in a short bill like this. So I think I'm in the same boat as Ewing and Fester, looking for more answers than we can figure out right now.
I kind of agree, and I think everybody agrees that it's a monumental problem, and there's a whole bunch of facets out there that have knowingly or unknowingly contributed to the dilemma that we are faced with today. One thing was brought up earlier was if the kid is disruptive in class or smokes pot in school, he gets suspended. And that's punishment in the eyes of the adult. It's not punishment in the eyes of the kid.
The reward. Some for some,
exactly.
Not for all.
At the same time, what the school is saying, we are not going to be responsible anymore, it's up to the parent, is really what that says. Whereupon no one has told the parents that they have to resurrect their responsibility if they have neglected that, if you will, and take charge of that kid.
And some parents also saying it's
well,
school,
the fact of the matter is
that go see the other guy.
Exactly. And we've allowed that, and we've actually promoted that in our society today by creating something else out there to give somebody that, quote, helping hand. It was supposed to be a temporary kind of thing that should intervene to resolve crisis situations and so forth, and at the same time, it has blown out of proportion. Mr. Gall, I see your hand. Where instead of helping, it has now hindered and caused society to be loose, and somebody else is, as you say, Mr. Fulton, pointing the finger at somebody else, is their responsibility. The parent says, well, the state took over my kids, so it's their responsibility now, because I no longer have rights and to do thus and so to discipline my child. I can't spank them or keep them contained within a home that's locked. In effect, if you will, you must stay home. You can't go run on the streets and so forth. And somebody has told the kid that they don't have to stand for that, that they have rights too, and that the parent no longer has the right to detain that child in an environment so that corrections can be taken, as far as the parent is concerned. Whether that's right or wrong is not the issue. The issue is that that situation does exist. So the school says, I'm no longer responsible. And the parent says, well, I can't be responsible because the law says we have no right to discipline our children in the fashion that we want to discipline them. The law says, well, if you are going to molest your children or abuse them at home or strike, because we can't have children being sexually or physically abused in the home. So we've got a round robin of situations where, in the best interest of the youngster, always, the school has said this, the state has said that, and the parent has said that, and everybody's working against each other, not with each other. And that's one of the reasons why I earlier suggested that we have not nipped it in the bud in the very beginning, when all these crisis situations seem to arise, and get the parties involved or affected together and throw their cards on the table and say, hey, we've got to resolve this now, because 6 months from now we're going to find that kid in McLaughlin or sexually abused out there, selling their bodies or involved in bad things with bad people. I think that Representative Liska's bill is very pertinent. I think that it's extremely important that we address at least one thing at a time, if that's the way we have to do it. This committee could take on the responsibility of looking at the statutes, working with the schools and so forth, and setting down, if nothing else, a statement of policy, which is something that we all, I think, deserve to look at.
But it requires then the individual to be made a ward of the state, and then
that's right.
So it's a sort of final step in the progression that you've been saying about. And I think the question that some of us have is there a, is that the only solution, or is that a necessary solution? The problem is here, regardless of how it came here, but is making a runaway a ward of the state the answer?
That's exactly right.
Mr. Rawls?
And in this particular case.
Excuse me. Mr. Davis had asked for the floor after Mr. Copeland, I beg your pardon, then Mr. Rawls. Mr. Davis.
Well, the comment was just brought up by Representative Copeland, Mr. Liska, I guess I have some problems with that first section, and it sort of goes back to what Representative Passenger, Representative Ewing was saying, is that, you know, what constitutes a habitually absent person, and maybe this person is, for good reason, he is being habitually absent, but then he becomes almost automatically a ward of the state, and you know, I would hope also, as Representative Copeland was saying, that we could do something before we send these children to an appropriate juvenile institution. I have some other problems with that, but as long as we're discussing Section 1, those are my concerns, I think. I think that there should be a real good definition of a habitually absent. And secondly, I think we need to go someplace. The section needs to have addressed the situation before we make that child, even though, let's say, he's been absent from the school or from the home. There should be something else before we make them a ward of the state. I just would like to have those concerns addressed for me, and before I feel comfortable with that section.
Mr. Davis, would you consider putting a time certain limit for example, let's just use some of the typical examples that Representative Liska just gave. let's just say that the kid has been truant from school and has run away from the foster parent, which automatically says he ran away from the parent as well. So we already know there's a problem here. And no one has been able to contain that runaway. Maybe that child really has some problems. And the only solution to keeping that kid off the street from being harmed by adult pornographers and so forth is to take him into an institution or a facility. But given a time certain within X number of days, let's say, that action taken to resolve what's going to happen to that kid. In other words, we don't leave him in there indefinitely until we get around to deciding what to do with him and finding out the real serious problems that exist. But given a time certain for that, perhaps professional staffing to take place, which is a suggestion not unlike other professional approaches, if that can be accepted. So that we don't leave him there. I think that's what you're trying to say.
What I'm saying is, well, let's say it's this individual. Let's say an individual is 16 years old, and he's a responsible child, but he's declared habitually absent. Maybe he has a job, whatever. He's habitually absent from the home. All according to this section, what's in this to you, the way it reads, is he's committing a crime because he's not at home. And I'd hate to. You know, I'm not saying that we need to address the situation of a runaway child, but if a child is 16, he's not there, he's habitually absent, then he's going to become a ward of the state. And
no, he is already a ward of the state, according to that paragraph. It says, is a ward of the state and shall. In other words, this is after the child has become a ward of the state. It's giving the state direction to institutionalize him instead of
right, so because he's a runaway, he's committed a crime. That's right. What I'm saying in this section.
Madam Chairman, I think that I see the point here. Habitually absent in itself is very ambiguous. Perhaps the city in there without permission of the parent and what have you. I mean, you couldn't be habitually absent, really, unless you had permission. Otherwise, you just would be absent unless somebody's controlling you. So without permission of the that could be worded in there where it could be we could make better English and understand.
I see.
And I definitely agree that the juvenile institution, the institution is not the right word we want there.
Mr. Gall?
No, I'll defer till we hear some more testimony.
Very good. Are there any other questions or comments before we ask for the next witness? Thank you very much, Mr. Liska, and certainly stand by because I'm sure there's going to be other discussions. We appreciate you. If you'd like to come to the table and sit here, we'd be happy to have that.
All right. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to testify on this. Very important piece of legislation.
Well, if you've got the time and you want to. If you have the time, Representative Liska, you certainly may join us at the table.
Yeah, sure.
Mike Price, please. Mr. Price, you're going to be electronically recorded, so please state your name for the record and your affiliation.
I'm Mike Price. I'm the Director of the Division of Family and Services. I've reviewed this bill along with my staff, and we agree with the representative that, and with the committee, that runaways are really a difficult problem to deal with. We're concerned whether this bill itself will deal adequately with that problem. I guess that's where we're coming from. I was really interested in the discussions that were just taking place here because I think all of us agree it's a real difficult problem. And I guess I would concur that this bill by itself doesn't really begin to deal with the vastness of it all, and that we really need to look at some different approaches to the issue. And I would concur, I heard different individuals comment that they believe that we need to look at it in a more comprehensive way, look at as many options that we can find. And I would suggest that that this would be a wise thing for the legislature to do, possibly a Brewerton Commission, but definitely a more comprehensive review of a very difficult issue. But since I'm here to testify on this particular bill, I'd like to make a few remarks. Mainly, I would say that the way it is written presently would require that our division treat a runaway child as a delinquent youth and place that youth at McLaughlin Youth Center. We have problems with that, mainly because, first, McLaughlin is overcrowded with delinquent children. It would, to add additional facilities, we are estimating it would, we would need to add some 30 beds just in McLaughlin, cost of a capital project of about $5 million. And to staff those 30 beds would add an operating cost the first year of approximately $1.2 million. But fundamentally, we have problems treating a runaway child as a delinquent youth. Historically, that's what happened in Alaska prior to 1977. The national trend is really away from that, and we concur with that move.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
that. We concur with the move not to institutionalize or to treat a runaway child as a delinquent, mainly because they haven't committed any crimes. Now, any runaway child who commits a crime, of course, is dealt with as a delinquent youth. So the individuals who have committed crimes are already dealt with in our system. And what we're really talking about are youths who haven't committed any crimes.
What we're really trying to do is prevent that kid from committing a crime if they run away.
Right, right. And I concur with that.
Madam Chair, can I ask one question?
We have three people, but you're the sponsor, so go ahead.
Well, I'd like to ask you, Mr. Price.
Sure.
You say you don't consider a runaway child as a delinquent. He is a delinquent. He's delinquent to his parents or foster home he's run away from. Although he had one out and held up a quick stop or anything. But he is delinquent, though.
Well, I guess we define delinquency as violating the state statute. That's our definition of delinquent. No, I agree they're beyond control of the parent or the guardian. But when we say delinquent, we're really talking about in a very narrow legal term, which is, have they committed any violations of state statute?
Is there a statute that defines the word delinquent? And if there is, could you point it to us?
I would have to talk with my staff and get back to you. Presently, the way we deal with a child who is running away is under 47 AS 47.10.010. And we deal with a child in need, as a child in need of aid. And we suggest that is a preferable approach because we believe that treating a child as a delinquent under the delinquent statutes is a punitive approach and fails to recognize that many of the children who are running away from home are running away from a very difficult home situation. And that how the system presently works now, and we believe more needs to be done, is that when a child runs away, the police refers that child to our social workers. We then meet with our social worker meets with the child and says, do you want to go home? If so, we'll take you home and we'll talk with your parents and with you. And many times that ends the situation. Other times the child
Excuse
may
me.
Say...
Let's go a little further.
Yeah.
The social worker says, do you want to go home? And what alternative do you present to the child? Do you want to go home or...
Well, that's the next point I was making.
All right.
Okay. If a child says, well, listen, I can't go home. There's too many things happening. Then the child has an option of asking that our agency take custody of that child and the child in need of aid. And we will take that action. Then we have a foster homes that are available and we have private institutional care that's available if that's appropriate. Of course, our aim is to reunite the child with the family. We believe fundamentally parents have the responsibility of caring for their children. Now, and that means also if there's a problem at home to help resolve that problem in their home. And now, quite frankly, there are occasions when a child is then placed in our custody and the child runs away from the foster home or the private institutional care that we are licensing and pay for. But it's our agency's view at this point that unless a child breaks a state statute, they should not be deemed delinquent. And quite frankly, we just don't think it's a good idea to mix children who haven't committed a crime with children who have committed a crime. And that's what McLaughlin News Center is about.
You would have to admit, though, Mr. Price, that there is a disciplinary problem someplace within that child's framework. Is that correct?
No, I wouldn't necessarily see it in that view. It assumes, when we say there's a disciplinary problem, it's an assumption that the parents are not at fault. And
parents are what?
That the parents are not at fault in this situation.
Just the opposite.
Oh, well, I guess I wouldn't know what you define as disciplinary, but I would say that I guess we could agree that there are some serious problems going on in the family that when a child is running away from. And our agency's attitude is that we believe that it's very important that family counseling be provided for that family.
I guess what I was trying to get at, Mr. Price, is that looking back at this bill, it addresses only those children who are not sexually abused or molested or that sort of thing. These are, and so that's why I said that you can presume that a goodly, if not all, portions of this bill of children that this bill would address would be a disciplinary problem. Because you've already avoided, as it says in the bill, that, Liska has told us that it deals with only the children that don't have those problems.
Well,
and if that's the case, it is a disciplinary problem, would you say?
Well, I have problems with that term because I don't know what you really mean by that.
Well, living up to the standards that are established in the home, in school, or in the foster home. Go to bed at 9 o'clock, get up and eat your breakfast and go to school. Time constraints and so forth and so on. I think that's what I'm trying to say. Adult authority looked upon by the youth as not reasonable, or defying that adult authority in some fashion. Is that that's my definition.
Yeah, anyway. I understand your perspective, but I guess I don't share your perspective. I can tell
because of a couple of other instances where we had this discussion, namely boys' range.
Well, that's another issue, but I would suggest that there are many things that happen in a family as far as interaction, as far as the kinds of problems that exist, and to label everything that isn't sexual abuse or physical abuse and disciplinary problems, I think that is an oversimplification. I would suggest that that there's many reasons that a child runs away from home, and a lot has to do with what we, in social work term, call dysfunctional families. Rather than making any particular presumption, what I would suggest that it's a complex, difficult area. I don't think there's any one easy, simple answer to it. And I would encourage an approach to that would enable the legislature to look into the problem in some depth, seek various professional recommendations, and develop a comprehensive approach. That would be my recommendations. But if I could go on.
Mr. Pessinger has a question, Mr. Ewing, and then Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll try to be brief. Mike, I was looking at emergency custody and temporary placement. It's 4710-142. And basically it says, subsection B, that a minor who has left home is evading the person having legal custody, that he may obtain the services of the department. The department shall assess the situation, furnish the minor with social services it considers appropriate to protect his well-being. If after assessing the situation and furnishing the appropriate social services, the department may take emergency custody of the minor. But all this is based on the court finding also probable cause that the minor is in need of emergency custody and placement. So there's a very careful balancing between Hess and the judiciary. But what I'm thinking is, it says a minor may obtain the services. Would we want to maybe think about saying that a minor who is evading the legal custody, or is evading the person having legal custody, rather than a minor may obtain, giving him the option, could we constitutionally say that a minor is to obtain? And then would an approach be where we look at Hess from a fiscal standpoint as far as services available? It seems to me then that we're constitutional, we're plugged into existing law. Rather than may obtain, we say is to obtain, and then we take a hard look at what you can offer this minor, which is also a breakdown in the system. You offer all you can within your fiscal restraints, but not always, and you could offer some more. So am I getting close to...
Well, that's one approach. I, not being an attorney, I want to have the AG's office to review that. But I think you're getting to the point that it deals with a difficult area, and I guess the question is what is the role of the parents and what is the role of the state? And this is a difficult area. And well, I talked to my own staff, especially my field staff, about this problem, because I made it a point to talk to a lot of my field staff. We recognize it's a difficult issue, and we don't offer an alternate plan at this point. And I guess what I wanted to say was that we have the same difficulty you all do here at this table when we sit down and think about all the ramifications of various options, that there's no real easy solution to it. And I would feel more comfortable in saying to you that it would be my recommendation that the legislature develop a committee, a task force, and begin a thorough process of reviewing the state's response to this real difficult issue. We are not defending the present system as being the most effective way to deal with the problem. Not at all.
But Mr. Price, the Social Services Department has the most opportune. Has the best opportunity and works with these situations intimately from day to day. It seemed to be a good place for you guys to have seen the situation and certainly make recommendations as to how to resolve it.
Oh, we would very much like to be part of that process.
No. I'm saying that you've recognized, obviously, well, maybe I shouldn't say that. Have you recognized this as a problem, and if so, for how long? And working with it day to day, it seems to me as though you'd be the first one to come forward and say, hey, this system that we've got set up, whoever set it up, doesn't matter, isn't working.
Well,
and we got a good solution. Here's a proposal.
I wish it was that easy. our division has been involved with this process over the years. We think that we've made some progress. For instance, one of the steps we think is progress is not to define the youth as delinquent who runs away. We do think there's been some progress in allowing for our division to work with a youth who has run away. That enables our agency to provide the services.
But then you come right back and you pass out papers in a facility that is supposed to be retraining these youngsters, that says you don't have to work, you don't have to do anything except thus and so. And I'm talking about the boys' ranch again. Those kind of contradictory things confuses a youngster with authority. And to me, the department isn't doing anything but confusing the issue rather than trying to resolve it.
Well, I guess I would have to disagree with you, with all respect, is that I think you're mentioning two significantly different issues.
It all affects the kid.
Well, I think we're discussing a licensing issue versus a runaway issue.
Policy of the department.
I wouldn't want to mix the two.
We're going to investigate that anyway.
Can I ask one simple question?
We have Mr. Euling. Yes, you certainly may.
Well, I'll wait.
No, you can. What is it? He's got a quick question. I'll wait.
I'm still coming back to this juvenile delinquent. Now, I gave all of you an example of what happened to me when I had two teenagers that ran away from my foster home. One went to Texas, one went to Nevada. I didn't see those kids for at least 6 months. Now, you don't consider those as juvenile delinquents when they leave the state, and your department, the police department, didn't offer to do anything about it to get them back? Now, I'm just quoting one incident that happened to me. I don't know how much it is throughout the other foster home system.
Well,
I'm just trying to get in my mind what you consider a juvenile delinquent.
Well, we defined that earlier. It was our definition, our department's definition, was those children who violate state statute. I'm not saying that when you run away, it's not a problem. I believe it is a problem because it means it's a threat to the child. But I'm suggesting that when we talk about juvenile delinquency, we do it in terms of have we violated a state statute. And simply because a child runs away from home or leaves the state is not a violation of state law.
Well, for your information, sir, I'm in the process, but I will be in the process of changing that law, because any time a kid leaves a foster home or leaves the whole state of Alaska, to me, that's what this bill right here is addressing right here. It'll turn out up for any good when they leave the state.
Mr. Liska, I just pulled out Webster Dictionary and Mr. Price, and the definition in Webster Dictionary follows along the same line as Mr. Price says, except he omitted one thing. The dictionary says that a delinquent is defined as failing or neglecting to do what duty or law requires. So you're sticking by statute. Mr. Liska is saying he's expanding it to duty as well.
Sure. I wouldn't want to debate your perspective. I'm just saying that this is how this agency is operating, and I want to be accurate in describing the policies.
Mr. Euling?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just sort of listening to the discussion here, and getting back to the line 11 on habitually absent, I think, at least from Mr. Price's testimony, and having somebody who is a runaway that would be put into a situation like McLaughlin, maybe let me further go along and clarify, but I have a question first, and the question is, you have other kind of juveniles that are in a situation where they've stabbed people or they've committed some kind of a violent type of a situation in McLaughlin. Is that correct?
Well, that's true. We run the entire gamut, but let me be very frank with you, is that violent crime involves only a small number of youth in Alaska. The predominant crimes in Alaska are property-related crimes. Mm-hmm. However, we do have a small number.
I guess bringing along a further point is that if we, and I certainly concur in what Representative Liska is trying to do in all respect to him, but I think that there are a lot of different facets to this individual who might be a runaway. It might not, and just from the standpoint of looking at your fiscal note with the $5 million on it for the capital project for the 30 extra beds, where you're going to have to put them in McLaughlin, that's just one part of the whole problem. It just handles anchors in half the population, but it seems like we need to take a real hard look at in a task force form through the legislature and through HESS or through this committee, and in the sense of doing something that's not going to be just a Band-Aid. I think that's been our problem in the past. We put too many little Band-Aids on things instead of trying to look at it. And we're still looking at people as individuals, mm-hmm. and there may be some kind of inter-family kind of a situation that doesn't make them fall into a delinquent kind of a category. And I know we can't solve the family's problems, but just to put them all together and herd them into one place, I don't think that's going to be the solution to it.
We would have
Although
some
I agree
some
with the direction we're going with it, but I just would like to see it either more specific to gear it toward the individual situations. Maybe there's a way of putting some flexibility in that. Maybe there are other types of shelters that wouldn't be this kind of a hardcore situation. comment on that.
Well, we do have, right now, we utilize foster homes and private institutional care. Our preference is not to institutionalize children. We found that institutionalization is really a long and not an effective way to deal with children, because all of us live in families. Most of us live in families, and we have to learn to relate and deal with each other in a family setting. They lack in eventual individual attention that every child needs, and it's also extremely costly to do so. The average cost of institutional care is running us over $130 a day. It's terribly expensive. But if expense alone was not an issue, it still is not the preferable method, because institutional care is just not an effective treatment modality most of the time. We only use it as a last resort for, let's say, children who can't work out in a foster home. Even our preference for delinquent youth is not to place them in institutions, except where they represent a threat to the community. In that case, we have an obligation to protect the community. But our preference is for treatment in a home, if that can't work, or treatment in a foster home. That's our preference.
Mr. Davis, and then Mr. Copeland.
Thank you. I just have a comment, maybe to the committee, and that's, I don't want to address this bill for right now. My comment is that I think perhaps we should work on a possible resolution or some kind of a committee resolution addressing with this whole runaway situation and dealing with the whole issue as a total picture of just how, what we can do legislatively to help the Department of Health and Social Services, help the different agencies to deal with this very serious problem in our society. And I'd certainly be willing to donate my time to working on something.
Mr. Davis, most interested organizations available to us is the Juvenile Crime Commission in Anchorage. They are fully cognizant of not only the criminal aspect, but they are looking at prevention, and they are well informed and can bring us up to snuff and probably work with us, and I wouldn't have any difficulty in initiating that at all. Mr. Copeland? Go ahead, Mr. Davis. Well, I'm saying that there are resources out there already set up and available that has a monumental amount of backup material, facts, research, and so forth that will get us started at looking at this in a broader sense, as you suggested. I would not, at this time at least, consider setting up another committee or another organization.
Yeah. I'm saying a resolution. Possible resolution that could be sponsored by this committee to look into the whole situation, much like what Representative Hester just said, of dealing with this whole thing comprehensively and trying to come up with some solutions.
We could do that. We could consider that. Mr. Copeland?
Thank you. I'd be interested in seeing the Crime Commission report. I'm sure the other people in the committee would be, too, because my first question was going to deal with the numbers and the statistics, the number of runaways, the ages. What age children are we talking about? Children don't remain children. They do grow up. What are the, you know, whether you have background, what are the alternative approaches? What is, shall we say, the success rate in both the foster home approach? Certainly, I know it's higher from my past experience with it than institutionalization. But I remember we used to find these children as status offenders. And, since we got away from that, I'm not entirely sure that we've kept a handle on the problem. But if you have that statistics in that regard, then one of the questions, of course, also is the question of missing children as against runaways. You know, at which point do we decide that for example, there were children who have been, were murdered or kidnapped, may have been thought of as runaways, and that does crop up, but other than individual cases, they don't know how meaningful a problem that is. And I suppose, you know, what kind of placement might be considered under Section 1, what is available, so that we're dealing with a realistic feeling of the problem. In Section 2, which is the support question, does the court currently have authority to decide whether the parent would have to continue support, or is the parent, for instance, stuck if they're not? Yeah, in other words, I know that children can, if they get access to an attorney and are old enough, say 16 or so, and physically grown up, they can petition for emancipation and be treated as legal adults. Is there a reverse process where a parent can emancipate the child if they're able to support themselves, who makes the decision? These are all questions I don't expect answers right now, but I think they're all fit into parts of dealing with this problem in a realistic way.
We do have another witness to come before us, and if you have no further questions of Mr. Price, we'd ask Mary Whitman.
I think that's a long enough list.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Price.
If you don't mind, I'll ask my staff to reach you and make sure I have all your questions.
Mary Whitman is on our list to make comments. Mary, for the record, you are going to be electronically recorded, so please state your name.
My name is Mary Whitman. I have booked and represented LISCA staff. I have a quick little handout here that I had prepared before I come to the meeting. I would like to, after going over this with you, also testify as an individual and as a mother sitting here listening to the response to an overwhelming problem, which I'm getting is, let's study it a little more. First, I would like to say the data indicates that 85% of the commercially exploited children are missing at the time of the exploitation event. In the information that Representative Lister gave you, the section that he was referring to, Section 2 in your packet of information in your file, said that within 48 hours of a child being on the streets, they will have a life-affecting experience with someone. We can't afford to wait for several days, several weeks to decide whether or not to pick a child up. If you would refer to the very last page of the handout I just gave you, the emotionally scarred and damaged young people of today are the trained burglars, murderers, rapists, and drug pushers, pimps, and prostitutes of tomorrow. That particular page goes briefly through some of what it is actually costing us not to take action, not to do anything, just let's sit here and study it a little more. I'm very emotional about this. My son has reached 21, and I can say, well, I guess he's safe. But I have talked with a constituent whose daughter ran away. Why? Because she did not want to be home at 11:30 at night. She would rather go and spend the night and come in at 6 o'clock in the morning. She's 15 years old. What is the mother to do? The child leaves. Will the police go and get her? No, they will not. It is not against the law in this state to leave home. Now, where is the child today? She has finally been placed, after many weeks out on the street, she has been placed in a foster home. The child didn't have any, quote, sexual molesting problems, major problems in the home. They're simply disciplinary problems. The child will not do what they're supposed to do. Those parents are having to pay support for that child, even though they do not have the right of visitation, because the child doesn't want to see the parents. They don't have any control over her education, what she is doing, what she isn't doing, what she's learning, whether or not she goes to church. Their rights have been terminated by the state when that child was placed in a foster home. Sooner or later, they may get some of their rights back. But if the state can take your rights for your child away when you have not done anything to that child, then you should also be able to be emancipated from the responsibilities of rearing that child. The second two pages of the handout that I gave you referred to various people, apparently, who were picked up. They referred to them as the throwaways or the runaways. And it tells just very briefly what happened to the various ones. The big problem is that apparently you can't pick them up until it's too late. We do not, our children at the age that these children are being on the street, they don't have the maturity. They may have the rights of being there, but they don't have the maturity that goes with the rights that our state is giving them. It is the state's responsibility to take care of these children. If they were mentally ill, the state would not let them run on the street and be exploited in this manner. I do believe one of the other instances, aside from saying that the problem can be that they don't want to cut their hair, or maybe it's you will not smoke marijuana in my house, and the child says, oh yes I will, I have a right to if I want to, I can possess X amount of it. These are basic household family problems. The children are going to go through them. When you're talking about somebody who is habitually absent, I would think that when the parent calls the police and asks for help, there apparently has been an ongoing problem. No one will call the police if they have a minor incident with their child. It's usually a very last resort that you will call the police to go after your child. At that time, the parents are saying, I need help, I cannot control this child. For the protection of the child, we're asking the state to intervene. If the state does not accept this responsibility, I really and truly feel that we are ruining the best resource that our state has, and that is our children.
Representative Pessinger and Gall.
Mary, I want to respect every point you make, and I'll try to be very brief. You know, who am I to say that this approach that you're proposing is either constitutional or not unconstitutional? I don't have that right to say that. But I do. Would you consider a committee substitute where we take the existing law, which is emergency custody, and it says a minor who has left home is evading the legal custody of the person having custody of him, is to obtain the services of the Department of HESS? We could do that with an existing statute that has probable cause and court review, which we know is constitutional. And that would allow us to put this person in the custody of HESS for counseling, and if they wanted, if HESS went too far and incarcerated him, then that action of HESS could be illegal. But we know that HESS should have the right to confer with him. We know that. Would you have any objection to that kind of approach, or are you a little firmer on the approach that's before us? And I know I'm just trying to offer you maybe a little bit of a solution to a problem rather than study it, because you shouldn't have to feel frustrated over something that's important. It would just be changing the language that we now allow the runaway to elect to obtain the services, rather than have him elect that he shall obtain the services. And then we leave all the judiciary involvement in place. And that, when he receives the services of HESS, HESS's activity would only become illegal if they exceed, if they start being heavy-handed with him beyond court approval. Only in that case would we get into the legal arguments against what we're doing. I think. Do you see what I'm saying? Would you accept that approach? It's something we could do real easily and know we're probably on legal grounds.
Madam Chairman, Representative, I would say that they shall receive it, because if you say that they can elect, maybe they're going to walk up and ask the policeman for help, and maybe they're not. Normally they're not. They're already in trouble because they ran away from home. They're not going to get anywhere near a policeman. It should be that if they ran away from home and they're reported, the police will pick them up. They will say, hey kid, you're either going home or you're going to some place that's going to help you. We're not going to just let you go, and if you elect to receive help, fine, and if you don't, we'll turn you loose again. I don't think that that's going far enough, and it definitely is not going to get them off the street.
And I think in addition, the thrust of the language in the latter half of this bill simply says, in effect, and I think it can be better written than what you were just described, it simply says that if the state is going to take over as guardian of that kid, without the permission of the parent, then the state's obligation is to the care and keeping. If you're going to take the rights of the parents away, then you're also going to have to alleviate the financial responsibility. In effect, that would say the state, and I think we ought to include this in language, that would say that every effort be made to assure that youngsters return to the home if it's a disciplinary problem that is reasonable, and or some other language that defines 11:30 at night, being home instead of 6 o'clock in the morning, carrying out the garbage instead of running around doing bad things and so forth, and having rules of the household violated that are reasonable within societal measures. I think that's what's being said here, that too often the option is given to the youngster, and so it's easier to go elsewhere, not expecting, or the youngster not expecting to be disciplined in such a manner, they can have a little more freedom than they would have had at the home. And if the parents are firm and reasonable and Christian in their attitudes toward that child, and the child is rebelling at age 13 or 14 or 15, when that rebellion becomes worse, perhaps that's what the thrust of the legislation is before us. Mary?
I would like to make one other point. There, it seems to be a great discussion as to what you're going to do with these children. I think that something like Mount Inchcombe could be very useful.
Yeah.
The child, if you make this a state law, would be breaking the law and would be considered a delinquent when he cannot be either.